Make sure I get my numbers right. I got the man right, Mr. Craig Hunt. Item number six, update on the underground storage tank cleanup program. You been wearing that tie all day?
Yeah.
That's dedication. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'll tell you, I didn't eat all that chocolate. I should have.
Good afternoon, Chairman Noren and members of the board. My name is Craig Hunt. I am an engineer in our cleanup, plus our supervisor, Casey Ashley. And we have multiple programs within that that are unified within the program. So each staff person generally works on at least two of the programs. There are separate regulations for the regulations and funding for leaking underground storage tank cleanup sites versus other types of cleanup sites. And thus there is a separate statewide program. It covers approximately two-thirds of our overall cleanup program work. The separate funding is from a mill fee on fuel stored in USTs. That's currently about 2 cents a gallon at the pump. And is administered through the UST Cleanup Fund, which is also a state water board program. Statewide, the UST Cleanup Program includes direct regulatory oversight by the regional boards and also some local agencies, often referred to as local oversight programs or LOPs. There is state board program staff, and there is also the state board UST cleanup fund staff, which are actually very separate from the program staff at the state board. Moving on to the next page, discuss the low threat closure policy. In the past few years, the UST cleanup program and the cleanup fund have received increased attention from the state board itself. One of the concerns brought to the to state board members by stakeholders was about the reimbursement process of the cleanup fund. However, that review expanded to include the entire UST cleanup program. The review process changes were made with the fund to address issues. However, the rest of the review culminated in the low-threat UST case closure policy, which was issued, adopted by the state board, and became effective August 17th of last year. That policy outlines a set of standards under which to classify a UST cleanup site as low-threat, and also directs then that if it does meet the condition of being low threat, that the case be closed. The policy does contain some considerable leeway, ostensibly in both directions, but more so for considering sites to be low threat, even when the specific standards in the policy may not be met. The state board subsequently also adopted an implementation plan for the policy. So what makes a site low threat? It has to be within a municipal water service supply area. The groundwater contamination cannot be expanding anymore. Free product and secondary source material, meaning heavily contaminated soil, should be remediated as feasible. And there are specific criteria regarding groundwater contamination, soil contamination levels for considering direct exposure pathways to residents or utility workers, and for considering vapor intrusion exposure pathways. Very particularly, this has to be just petroleum. It has to be just the gasoline, diesel fuel, waste oil potentially, because the policy explicitly assumes that natural biodegradation of these materials, which does happen, will will result in previous cleanup policy by the state board being met, which is that water quality objectives and groundwater will be met within a reasonable period of time. The policy states that a reasonable period of time when it is a low threat site is centuries. So this policy does bring some additional work to Regional Water Board staff. We are to annually complete a review of each open case with regard to the policy. August 16th, 2013 was the due date for the first reviews of all open UST cases. We met that due date. And subsequently, we have to develop path to closure plans for each case not being closed. There is also additional requests and reviews from state board staff on sites, and we are having to respond to those. So on the next page, there is additional state water board oversight then within the oversight of the sites. The implementation plan requires that state board UST program staff review all case closure denials that we make. And we have been told by the program manager at the state board that, in fact, they will be reviewing all cases that we are not closing, not just ones for which we received a closure request. The UST Cleanup Fund program staff were already doing some secondary technical oversight on cases. The policy and the plan has directed the fund to go ahead and move forward with closing those cases with which they had already previously recommended closure. And also, I didn't mention earlier, much of our work is reported through an online database system called GeoTracker, and that provides a lot of public access to information about cleanup sites. But the UST program staff have also implemented a tool within GeoTracker to track our response timeliness to work plans and closure requests. The tool is also internally helpful for us to keeping track of these items. We have two local oversight programs within our region. LOPs are local agencies that the state board contracts with to do the UST cleanup site oversight. Instead of the regional water board doing it. In Humboldt County, the County Environmental Health Department is an LOP that has oversight of all Humboldt County UST cases. In Sonoma County, the Department of Health, the County Department of Health covers all Sonoma County UST cases outside of the cities of Santa Rosa and Healdsburg, which we regulates. We have very good working relationships with both LOPs, and we are tasked with some oversight and technical support with the LOP programs. In this whole review and revision process from the state board, the LOP requirements were revised, and we recommended that both our LOPs be recertified, and they were in the first round of recertifications earlier this year. However, there is a new requirement for a minimum number of cases, and Humboldt County is likely to drop below that over the next year or so. Whether that means they lose their program in the next year or have a couple years after that, when their program goes away, those cases will then come under our oversight, any cases that remain open. I'd like to discuss some of the results from our first round of low threat evaluation of our sites. This is where I missed the projector. looking at the slide that has the pie charts on it, just looking at the top chart right now, these are, as of 1 year ago, we had approximately 340 sites under our lead open cases. And of those, you see the dark color on the right side, 178 have been determined to not meet the low threat closure policy criteria. On the left, since that time, we have closed 75 cases, whether that was using the policy or not. And we have 88 more cases there which have been determined to meet the policy and are going through the closure process, which can be a little lengthy because it involves destroying groundwater monitoring wells appropriately. On below, it just gives a quick breakdown, a similar breakdown for the Humboldt County LOP, which you can see they have 70 where the criteria are not met. However, I expect that number to go down as state board staff do their second reviews for closure. Sonoma County LOP, including areas of Sonoma County that are outside of Region 1 but are in Region 2, they have 116 cases there remaining currently. And statewide, looking at it, statewide there's a little over 7,000 cases, and currently it appears that about two-thirds have been determined to not meet the low-threat policy criteria. I'd like to talk now about some of the long-term progression of the UST program. And the chart that is on this figure is actually showing our active caseload, the number of open sites that we were the lead agency for at the end of each year. That chart's going from 1987 into 2012, plus a dashed line going down there, which includes all those that have been closed in the past year or will be closed as part of the policy. The vast majority of UST cleanup sites were opened in the late 1980s and 1990s due to new federal UST regulations that required system upgrades. Typically, those upgrades included pulling the old tanks out, which was done under some sort of local agency oversight. And if contamination was found in the ground, it was generally referred to us then for making it into a site and then having it investigated and remediated. The new upgraded systems leak a lot less, and so I'm not even aware of any sites that we've opened since then which involved new tanks leaking. Some sites, during that early round, some sites could be quickly closed with a relatively small amount of work, maybe a single dig to remove contaminated soil, or within a few years with a round of investigation and maybe digging up some contamination if needed. And during the 1990s, those cases were being closed. So even though this chart shows kind of a leveling off in case load during the 1990s, that was actually a very active time with 50 to 100 new sites coming in a year and 50 to 100 sites being closed in a year. For the last 10 years, though, now that all those system upgrades were made, the number of new cases each year has dropped to just a few. And our closure rate for the past 10 years has remained relatively steady, bouncing around in the neighborhood of 30, up until just this past year with the closure policy. Now, just about all the open sites that are left either have contamination that is technically complex to investigate and remediate, or are procedurally difficult, like with recalcitrant or absent responsible parties. Moving on to the next page, discussing some issues. The policy has imposed new closure standards, and some sites at which we would have previously required more remediation are now closing. Another issue is that the screening criteria within the policy, particularly for soil contamination, are only for a very few fuel components, meaning just a few of the molecules that are within these great mixes of petroleum hydrocarbons. As a result, there are some sites with high concentrations of the fuel petroleum hydrocarbon that has weathered, but there's still high concentrations in soil, but they don't exceed the screening criteria. And so you have properties that are closing, sites that are closing without further remediation, though they may have shallow contamination left in place, potentially without restrictions on that. As was mentioned, Regional Water Board staff's technical conclusions are now routinely reviewed by State Board staff, with State Board staff having the final say. One result of this is that our staff are spending additional time entering information into GeoTracker because State Board staff has extremely limited resources and time to draw their technical conclusions. They don't have access to our files. They only have access of what's in GeoTracker. That includes usually all recent information about a site, but not older information. And so if we have reason to keep a site open and require more work, we've got to make sure that in GeoTracker that is explained clearly. And there are, of course, as you can see with this program, you know, with these general caseloads going down, we are looking at potential future budget reductions. We have been told by program managers at the State Board that the current discussions in Sacramento are when will this program be phased out, and that includes the cleanup fund and the mill tax on fuel, and just how to do that. Within what time frame? The current discussions certainly make that less than 10 years. It's the intent then that any remaining open UST sites would then just be transferred over to our second main cleanup program, which is the site cleanup program. However, there's not funding. There's not money associated with that outside of generally what the responsible parties can bring to it. So, next steps. The completion due date for the path to closure plans, that's a particular screen in GeoTracker, is the end of this calendar year. We'll meet that goal. There will be the annual policy compliance reviews. We are hoping to return to the staff time that we've had to direct towards meeting these things with the new policy, that some of that staff time could be directed back to actually getting sites cleaned up. And as I said, with the program sunset, we have a limited number of years. We don't know how many in which the cleanup fund will remain. And with the way the fund works now, we're generally not able to direct. They're generally budgeted for a certain amount of money, whether or not that will actually cover the work that's needed at the site. So, you know, there's more work needed most likely than will be provided in the last years of the fund. It's just my, you know, thinking. That concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Craig, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I guess it is on. As a way of disclosure, by the way, I've known you for many years. I've known much of the cleanup staff for many years. I've worked on this process in underground. I've probably worked on hundreds of underground tank sites. I was actually part of the formulation of the low-risk policy, and the outcome of which I didn't necessarily agree with completely, and that's part of the record, and that's the way it stands. A couple things that really stand out to me, though, is that there's a majority a Region 1 that is not going to qualify for low threat on its face, simply because it does not have public water supply. And so we have a failure within Region 1, essentially, on areas that are going to just not be covered under low risk. And so we have a somewhat of a dichotomy here that we have tank sites that, say, in city boundaries, for instance, say Santa Rosa, that would be closed under low threat, and that would be procedurally acceptable under the existing policy.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is, what do we do with some of these sites that are outlying areas, like Grayton or Boonville or further north? And that I was around in the early 90s where the fund just got going. The fund was created as a means of financial assurance and mechanism of reimbursement, up to $1.5 million, by the way, per occurrence, to help people clean these sites up. And the problem, as it is now, is that the fund is being essentially going through the process of the end of life of fund, and that we still have a high number of sites in our region where we have high quality groundwater that's shallow, that is being consumed with no resources, with a diminishing resources and a closing window from which to deal with this. And that really, I have to say, that really bothers me. I have a water well myself. I have great interest in preserving our high quality water in Region 1. And let me ask you to get to some questions. The path to closure plan that's being put together, does the state board anticipate that you will consult with the responsible party or the consultant that's working on these sites to formulate a plan that's real and workable? Do you have any insight to that?
We had a long discussion about that in the last UST program roundtable about a month ago, I think, less than that, because we were talking about various things to do with this and having to get it done, just meeting this plan due date there, but also then from that. And we expressed to the state board program managers that, yes, for those sites which are actually actively being worked on, where the responsible party is being responsible, where they have a consultant working on this, we already have some sort of path forward that we've been discussing. And so, yes, they do expect us to discuss it with them and work on that with the responsible parties and with the consultants involved. The very initial blush that I heard from the state board, though, on terms of what are the obstacles to closure for what's remaining open, is that maybe that accounts for half the sites in terms of the impediments to closure. These are things we are supposed to somehow translate into these within GeoTrackers, where they cull these reports from. Half are ones in which nothing's happening. And we, in terms of, don't have the responsible parties on board to do something. They have not gotten into the cleanup fund. They won't get into the cleanup fund. They will not do the work. We have very limited enforcement resources to proceed with these kind of things to try and get them to do things. And of course, in that case, we can't come up with a realistic path to closure, because right now. And state board program manager was discussing how they might try and see what they can do for coming up with some of these resources, whether it's enforcement resources to apply to these things, to those kind of sites or not, or some other potential support. But
does that analysis also include an economic analysis so that it informs the cleanup fund of what kind of dollars are possibly needed on these sites?
No. There is no function within this reporting tool, and this reporting tool has limited functionality for getting things across, except for text boxes where we type it in and hopefully they look at it at some point. But in terms of when they go, okay, here are the 4,000 remaining sites open across the board, it's all just what are the check boxes and what were the identified impediments to closure in the process of the review of regards to the closure policy. So there's not an indication of it looks like this is going to take, you know, a $400,000 massive remediation, or we could get this done for, you know, potentially with a small one-time hit of some sort of treatment.
Well, and so, and as that goes too, I mean, there are many, many, many reasons why some of these sites do not go forward. And you and I and Jan and Joe and everybody else in cleanups has experienced sites out there that, and responsible parties that for a variety of reasons, they can't do it. Without the fund, you can't do it. Without regulatory technical assistance, you can't do it. Without without a competent consultant, you can't do it.
Right.
And there's many reasons. And it concerns me that the cleanup fund and the state board through the policy is closing things off the bottom of the tree of the universe of cleanups out here. And I don't necessarily see and have not heard articulated a process from which we are going to get, and I say we, as the water boards, are going to get to these risk sites within some reasonable time frame so that we're not left with catastrophes. And that in Region 1 means that the tank sites that are not going to qualify for low risk could potentially be left hanging here with no viable means from which to remediate groundwater that, in my experience, is oftentimes heavily impacted with contaminants that are not going to remediate in a reasonable period of time, even several hundred years. And that, I think, is a real problem. At the same time, can I ask you, does the accounting of sites that you enumerate here include the open and inactive sites? Is it everything, or is this just open?
This is everything.
This is everything on the table that
this
you have.
This is everything on the table. So ones in which, whether or not there is such a status as open inactive has changed over the years up and down, whether or not we can actually call something that. But this is everything.
Let me ask you, too, the sunset is of the fund. By legislation right now is 2016.
Right.
And it's my understanding that there has been discussions to extend it to soft land, the cleanup fund somehow, instead of crash it at 2016. I have not heard anything to the contrary of that.
There are various intentions, and I'm certainly not privy to the legislature in terms of what they intend to do. However, there is a bill to do a 2-year extension currently, and I think to a certain extent that's just to give themselves some more time to figure out how to wind this down. We were told that this path to closure plan entry into GeoTracker is going to be used as a tool. They're going to develop a report from that to try and estimate what kind of time frame is needed. However, as was also discussed, then we've had no guidance whatsoever on how to fill out these screens and what kind of time frames should be put on them so the report itself
is valid.
Is
and here's the thing, Craig, is that so you have then, as I understand it, secondary due date here in December to develop this pathway to closure process up. It would be my request, with hopefully the support of my board members, that soon thereafter, at the January meeting, I would like to have you come back and fill us in on what exactly that looks like. Because again, I think we are having a process that's winding down around us that potentially leaves us with sites that are potentially very bad, that are inconsistent with our basin plan, except for the low-risk policy, from which these sites, many of them, are not going to apply.
Right.
And I'm left with sites as a regulator then that we're going to be back to the bad old days where we only have the tool of enforcement to go after people that can't do this
right.
even with the fund in play.
Right.
And that's a real problem in my mind.
Yes, I
so
very much agree. And
it would be my request that, and I'd like to have my colleagues actually weigh in on their questions if they have them here, but that to conclude on especially that item, that you come back in front of us and inform us of what has been transpired in that time. Mr. Metzi, did you want to say something?
Only that I yes, I did, but I can't. I'm
just go for it.
Only that I would second that. In your opinion, there's a problem here. In your opinion, there's a problem here. I'd like to hear about it too. I mean, if we're just closing this up for expediency's sake, and I'm sure that once it's closed, the mill tax will be taken off the product, right?
That is my understanding, but I can't speak to what a legislature would do.
Yeah, the mill tax right now is 2 cents a gallon. It's going to roll back, I believe, very, very soon, if it hasn't already, to 1.6 or something like
they
that.
They did pass at least a short continuation.
I mean, we're talking 2 cents a gallon, but this is by the way, this is a $200 million machine.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Yes. You think the legislature's
yeah.
going to let that go?
Maybe. Did anybody else want to weigh in, by the way? Okay, so it's a start of a conversation I think that we need to have here in Region 1, and we need to be aware of what's happening here and at the same time possibly take steps to communicate with State Board ourselves as a board to express our interest in having, if we're going to soft land this thing, then how are we going to do that? How are we going to get to some of these risk sites that do not qualify? Because having the cleanup fund essentially dictate how much money is being allocated to funds based on, I know that there's a finite pot of money out here, but we need to also get at some of these high-risk sites, and we need to handle some of this stuff so we are not leaving catastrophes in downtown Grayton, frankly. So we will see you, I assume, in January.
Okay.
Okay. And let's do that and see where we end up here, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Thanks for being patient today and hanging out. You look great in a tie, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Mr. Noren, could you check your mic? I'm not sure that you're recording. And maybe, I guess this one's not on either.
No, it's not on. It's
okay.
Not on.
Hello.
I'm getting a blow in there.
Hello.
You just need to be closer.